Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. From shopping to gift giving, there are many activities connected to the holidays that evoke special memories. One of the most special things is holiday baking, and a variety of cookies can be found at parties, cookie exchanges, and family gatherings. And even though cookies take on an extra significance at this time of year, they really are an anytime treat, beloved by all. And just in time for the holiday season is the book, Cookies, The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat, by our guest today, Vaughn Vreeland, who is supervising producer for the New York Times cooking section. Welcome to All Sides, Vaughn.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Amy.
In the introduction to your book, you write that this book is for anyone who has ever had an emotional response to a cookie. So, can you tell us about the role cookies have played in your life?
Yes, actually, funnily enough, I am coming to you live from my childhood bedroom.
Yay!
I'm still home for the holidays. I leave later today. And ironically, you know, this is the place where I grew up. So this is where I started creating those taste memories of cookies. I still have those cookies in my life, you know, be them store-bought or homemade during the holidays, especially where I see them, I smell them, I taste them, and just the memories come flooding back of when I first tried those cookies or what they mean to me in my family. You know, every time I eat an Oreo, I think about my grandma and how we would just bond over, you know, I was a little too young, but I would watch General Hospital with her, love a soap opera, and she would have her Chardonnay and I would have my milk, and that was our afternoon tea of sorts. So that's kind of what I meant by that is I think that there is a cookie out there for everyone, and something that that really does kind of flood you with the nostalgia, and obviously the holidays are probably the pinnacle time for that.
Yes, I have strong emotional responses to cookies as well. We can get into more details about that later, but holiday cookies were a significant part of my grandmother's life, so we have the grandma thing in common too. My grandma had quite the system. She made a lot of cookies, and you just mentioned that you watched soap operas while eating cookies with your grandma. So you were General Hospital. I was Guiding Light. That was
Of course, I mean, you know, the top two. We were a Susan Lucci household here too. So, you know,
I was way too young to be watching Guiding Light, but I was very invested. Yeah.
Yep. Same. What kind of cookies would your grandma make?
Oh my gosh. She used to, I mean, in her heyday, she would make like 12 different varieties. And when she passed away, we took all of her recipes that were all handwritten and we put them into, and we typed them up the best we could to put them into a book so that we could like carry them on. So now, my family and then my sister's family and my brother's family, we each make a different cookie that she made. So my sister took on the biscotti and I took on, we call them Italian wedding cookies. Have you ever heard of those?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So I took on the Italian wedding cookies. And then as a family, we do sugar cookie cutouts with her recipe. So.
Oh, I love that. I love that. You know, I just got back from going to a few different cities for the book, and in every single city people would send me recipes from their grandma, their great grandma, and it just is really cool to see how especially I think cookies and around the holidays, cookies are those things that endure and that you know, carry on from generation to generation, and recipes really are living, breathing things that do evolve with time, and they do stand the test of time, right? And I think that's another thing is traditions, and especially with the book, what I love to see is that people are making new traditions with the recipes in this book that hopefully they will be able to evolve to fit their needs, their tastes, and then pass it down to their children.
Yeah, back to the book. I mean, I am sure that the New York Times database has lots of cookies in it. How did you decide what ones would make it into this book?
Yeah, that's a great question. We had I think at the time of writing, probably 600 or 700 cookie recipes, if not maybe a little bit more. So it was really tough to, I mean, even for me to wrap my mind around all those cookies and like looking through all of those recipes. We had a big database that we then put into just a spreadsheet. And from there, based on ratings, reviews, types of cookies, I would kind of silo them into specific categories. And once I was able to actually see the emerging trends in our database of the types of cookies that we had a ton of chocolate chip cookies. I was like, we have probably 50 chocolate chip cookie recipes, if not more. So I would be doing a great disservice to the New York Times if I did not have a chocolate chip cookie chapter, because a lot of those recipes are also some of our Hallmark recipes, And so once we kind of winnowed that down, it was a lot easier to then create a table of contents. And then from there, I really just chose my favorite few recipes in each chapter. I did develop some recipes bespoke for the cookbook. There's a chapter, Fun, Fruity, and Tart, for example, where we had a lot of good recipes, but I still felt like there was something missing. There was a lot of citrus, and I wanted berry. I wanted, something a little bit more, something a little bit more annual rather than perennial. It was very, very like highly seasonal recipes in there. So I think that was one of those that I really was excited to dive into and then create more recipes for that chapter.
In your introduction, you call yourself the cookie man or the cookie monster. Were cookies always your favorite thing, or did you kind of just find your niche here, because you're good at baking cookies?
I think when I was writing it, I realized, and even actually doing kind of the press cycle for the book, I really realized like how much I owe to the cookie.
An ode to the cookie, yes.
It like really is one of those things that I can actually pinpoint like different chapters in my life where cookies were kind of at the start of it or helped me get there. I worked at a bakery after college, and I, went into my interview at the bakery with macarons, and I decided that, I was going to try to like flex a little bit. And then after that, I moved up to New York City, and my first job interview for like a 9-to-5 job, I brought in macarons because I was interviewing for a video producer role at BuzzFeed, on their Tasty team, which is their food team there. And so I was like, well, they got to know that I know how to cook. And then from there, I think every step of the way, like Cookie Week was the first kind of writing opportunity I had at the New York Times. The first recipe I developed at the New York Times was a cookie. I now have this book, which is my first book, and it's all about cookies. So I do owe cookies kind of everything. If I didn't say before that they are my favorite thing, they are now my favorite thing because they've given me a lot.
The cookies have given you qu quite the career.
Yes.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about cookies with Vaughn Vreeland, author of the book Cookies, The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat. He's also the supervising video producer for the New York Times cooking section. You have the book divided into sections, like the chapter titles are Cookies to Woo Your Boo, Flavor Combinations I Didn't Know I Needed, The Best Part of Waking Up is Cookies. What did you come up with these chapter names? Because they're all super fun.
I did. Yeah. So those are the kind of like, if you're stuck, if you don't know where to start, what you want to bake. Yeah, I feel like sometimes I get in the kitchen and I'm like, I know I need something sweet. I know I want a cookie, but I just don't know. I can't focus my thinking. And so those are some, what to cook when you don't really know what you want, kind of guiding principles. And then the chapters therein are, like the chocolate chip cookie chapter, spiced and spicy, nuts for nuts, fun, fruity, and tart, your new holiday faves. I think that was where I got a lot of inspiration and had a lot of fun with the actual book itself. being able to flex that creativity and really think about what types of ruts people get stuck in or what types of things that they might want or don't know that they want yet.
Did you alter some of the recipes for people with food allergies or dietary restrictions? I mean, I noticed in a couple of places that you write, you can substitute plant butter or instead of, real butter, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's definitely something we thought about very closely when we were coming up with the table of contents. I had somebody at the New York Times working closely with me on just making sure that, the cookies fit a wide array of dietary needs and also flavor profiles, textures, all those types of things. And whereas we didn't necessarily have the bandwidth to go in and retest the recipes with alternative flours or plant-based ingredients, those were definitely it was very helpful for us to actually use our user notes on the bottom of our recipes. I think New York Times is kind of famous for our cooking comments. And so whereas a lot of the cooking comments are sometimes a little silly, a little erratic, a lot of times they're
A
very,
little
very
salt.
helpful.
Sometimes they're salty.
Yeah,
Yes.
sometimes they're salty,
Yeah.
but we did find a lot of sweet ones for the book too. So we kind of do rely on folks to then, again, like I said, recipes are living, breathing things, so they're taking it and they're amending it to kind of be to fit their needs. And I think that was helpful for us. It's like, oh, this person made this cookie with 1-to-1 flour. I can't confidently say, that all of the cookies will work with 1-to-1 gluten free, but that is something that we tried to make sure we had in the book for sure.
You also have recipes for baking skills that range from beginner to advanced. Can you give me an example of your favorite cookie that you tell someone if they are a beginner and they grab this book? Which cookie do you tell them to start with?
Oh, that's such a good question. I usually will go with, well, I love an oatmeal raisin cookie. And I think one of the great things about that is just because they don't require any chilling. And a lot of times I think novice bakers are a little impatient because they're
Like, I
anxious
don't
and they
have
really
24 hours to wait for this.
Yes, yes,
Yes.
yes. So I think that those are a great one because they don't require any chilling. We have this cookie in there that is a sprinkle, an M&M cookie called the Rainbow Rave cookie, and those are really fun because I think a lot of times people are also asking for recipes to make with their kids that are easy, and those are just really fun because the kids just get to have go wild with, sprinkles and candy.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
So those
definitely.
are,
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
So over the weekend, I let my kids pick a recipe from your book, and we made them. And
Oh, fun.
they picked the Rainbow Rave cookies, of course, because how could you not, right?
Yes.
Sprinkles, M&Ms, lots of vanilla extract. It was a sugar overload, but they were so easy to make. I was impressed at how easy to make they were.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the sweeter cookies in the book for sure, but they're also very easy. I think on very purposefully so, quite sweet because they are meant to entice the kids. I think we also included the beautiful photography of some of the easier recipes up top, because that's the gateway. That's the entry point to baking. The barrier to entry shouldn't be a barrier at all. And I think, wanting to empower people who might not consider themselves the strongest bakers, wanting to empower them to, get outside their comfort zone a little bit is something that I try to do with everything that I write in my newsletter, any reporting that I do, but I also really wanted to do that with this book because that's ultimately what makes better bakers. And I think trying to inspire the younger generations to get in the kitchen, and not be afraid to make mistakes.
Well, Rainbow Rave was Jurevich Kid approved, definitely. Ten
Good.
10 out of 10, they said.
Thank you.
Our guest this hour is Vaughn Vreeland, author of the book Cookies, The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat. And coming up, we're going to continue talking about holiday baking, and we'll talk about cookie exchanges as well. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. how does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Whether you're baking for your family or taking part in a cookie exchange, there are hundreds of cookies to choose from. We're talking about holiday baking this hour, and appropriately enough, today is the start of the annual New York Times Cookie Week. Still with us to mark the occasion is Vaughn Vreeland, author of the book Cookies, The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat. He's also the supervising video producer for the New York Times cooking section. Thanks for spending time with us today, Vaughn.
Thank you, Amy. I'm so happy to be here and, you know, starting my week off talking cookies. Can't get better than that.
So we mentioned in the introduction today marks the start of the annual New York Times Cookie Week. Can you tell us more about the history behind that? How did the New York Times decide they were going to have a cookie week?
Yeah. So back in 2020, I think a lot of folks obviously felt very isolated, and we were trying to figure out ways of bringing people together through video. I think that was something that was really tantamount to our journalism, always is, but especially back then. And we were thinking, you know, hey, what if we did this kind of virtual cookie exchange? That would be fun with some of our video personalities. And a lot of folks just, you know, picked up their iPhones and started filming in their kitchens, and we edited those together and created the first Cookie Week. And then after that, you know, we invited them into our studio kitchen once things were a little safer to film with people in person for the following year. And then we kind of realized that it caught on. We're like, let's make this a yearly tradition. And and now it has it's become kind of, it has a life of its own. You know, there's a newsletter. There are live events in New York City. We have a cookie truck that's actually going around New York. We're going to be delivering cookies and handing out special sections of the newspaper that's all about cookies. So it's really fun to see, and it's kind of the big show at New York Times Cooking, especially for me and the other editors that work on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's your own fault. You made it bigger and bigger.
I know. Right?
Yeah, I read about that. For the first time, you're welcoming the cookie season with special deliveries. So it says to participate, you could bake some cookies and then tag New York Times Cooking, do hashtag Cookie Week, and you may receive a special delivery at your doorstep. Is that only in New York, though? Can I play?
No, I think that's everyone. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So the one in New York is actually just like a truck that we're going. We repurposed one of our paper trucks that delivers the newspaper to different places, and we wrapped it in this like cookie wrapping. It looks really fun and festive, and we're just literally going around to different neighborhoods and passing out cookies. But what you're talking about is kind of more of a giveaway.
Okay.
Which anybody can participate in.
All right. Well, the cookies that I made in preparation for this show, I'm going to tag them.
I know. I heard that you made cookies.
I did. Yes.
Well, obviously the Rainbow Rave cookies, but did you make any others?
Yes. So I made your eggnog snickerdoodle cookies.
Fun.
Yeah. You wrote that the first recipe you ever developed for the New York Times cooking section was eggnog snickerdoodle. So I had to try them. And I'm going to say, like, I don't like eggnog, but these cookies were amazing, Vaughn. They're so good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, that is like one of those recipes that I, you know, when I was developing it, I was kind of like, this is such a unique flavor, but I hope that people really resonate with it. And it was quite a popular cookie when it first came out. And then I think over the years, it's kind of just like snowballed into this, you know, big Hallmark holiday cookie for us. And I love them. They're also, you know, that's also one of those easy cookies that I think I would tell people to maybe start with. It doesn't require a lot of chilling. You know, you rest the dough for like 20 minutes, but then I love a cookie that you can go from like pantry to countertop in under an hour.
Yes. So my kids were a little turned off by one of the ingredients, the rum extract, right? They helped me make them, but they couldn't wrap their head around rum extract. But so that's how we ended up making the Rainbow Rave cookies so you invented this recipe. Like, an eggnog snickerdoodle didn't exist before Vaughn made it.
No, that so actually this was a recipe that my sister had made before, clipped from probably like a teen beat type magazine in the early 2000s. And I asked her if she had it because I would remember tasting this cookie. She would make it a couple consecutive years in a row, and she was like, "Here's this recipe." And I looked at the recipe and it called for like coffee creamer and like all these
Oh,
wild ingredients.
yeah.
So I took the kind of taste memories that I had in that recipe, and I actually reverse engineered what I thought would work well for a snickerdoodle. I, added an extra egg yolk in there because I knew that eggnog was made with yolks, and I kind of wanted to like hearken the same flavors. So I definitely didn't come up with the idea of the eggnog snickerdoodle, but the recipe is uniquely mine, because I didn't want to call for like these wild, there was like Crisco and like holiday coffee creamer and rum and rum extract in it. And I was like, maybe let's make this a little bit more doable for the everyday cook.
Yes, I, my grandma, love her, but too many of her recipes had Crisco in it. I had to change it a little bit and just be like, I'm sorry, but I'm not putting Crisco
I think definitely a sign of that generation. I love them, but I had some of my prized recipes from my grandma call for some wild things like Dream Whip. If anybody remembers Dream Whip, it's
Okay. All
basically
right. Yeah.
some powder that you put into milk and it turns it into whipped cream. I think those types of things are what I look for when I'm like actually adapting a recipe or trying to make a recipe my own. It's like, okay, how am I going to use the fresh ingredients, the real stuff to then get me there?
Your book does contain recipes contributed by family and friends from the New York Times cooking section. Did you pick people who specialize in baking, or did you just find some cookies you really liked and you're like, you get to be in the book?
It was a little bit of both, to be honest with you. I mean, we definitely wanted to highlight as many developers as possible, and not every recipe developer does baking recipes or cookie recipes. But I think what was really fun was that we were able to include the Cookie Week family. We've kind of, like I said, made it into a thing larger than the sum of its parts. So I definitely wanted to include everybody who's ever been a part of Cookie Week and a lot of those great Cookie Week recipes. But then, yeah, totally just like really picking a lot of the recipes that I loved, which are, coincidentally by people that I love and respect.
You do have a section in here. We were talking about comments earlier, and one of your chapters is 5-star recipes with 5,000 plus comments online. So you're just like, well, we're going to crowdsource some of these. These are the ones everyone loves. Is that where that came from?
1000%. Yeah,
Yeah.
you gotta give them the greatest hits in there too. I think, like I said, we love how unique our community is at the New York Times and New York Times Cooking specifically. Like, we just have a really strong we have a really strong community here, and I think being able to include in all of the recipes, you'll see when you flip through the book, there are notes from different people at the bottom of the recipe, like, I made this with almond flour and it turned out great, or this is my kid's favorite recipe, I make it every year for his birthday, or sometimes they're a little bit sillier, but we did include those on every single recipe in the book. Just to show our love to the community and also kind of highlight that it is a very unique thing to us.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about cookies with Vaughn Vreeland, author of the book Cookies, The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat. He's also the supervising video producer for the New York Times cooking section. Now, the two cookies out of your book that I made both had my cookies baking on parchment paper. I didn't look at every single recipe, but are you just, you love using parchment paper, or do they all have that?
Yeah, so I would say unless it's like a skillet cookie or something that is like very specifically made and made in something that's not a cookie sheet, yes, usually they will call for parchment paper. People ask me a lot, like, can you bake on a silicone mat? rather
That was
than
my next
parchment
question.
paper.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, usually the two are, especially for cookies, pretty interchangeable. I at home will use a silicone mat just because I'm trying to reduce my waste, but I will always test my cookies on parchment paper because I know that that's something that more people have. You know, I think using the I try to limit the amount of specialty items and specialty ingredients that I'm making. I will try to always buy, you know, like the Land O'Lakes butter because I know that that's probably the most ubiquitous butter in America, right? Like the Domino sugar, just trying to test recipes with ingredients that the most amount of people will have because I want them to work in the most amount of kitchens.
Yeah, back to the Crisco thing for a moment. My grandma used to line her cookie sheets with Crisco and flour on top, right? And so when I,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, that was just her way. And when I started baking cookies, I did that because that's what she always did. But it was such a pain to clean up. So whenever I discovered the silicone mat, I was like, I am never doing this again.
Yeah, I know, you know, some of those, maybe not, they're not old wives' tales, but some
Yeah.
of those very traditional things. My grandma would do that kind of thing too. And you would try to show her another way, try to show her the light. And, you know, just, I think, my grandma specifically was pretty stubborn, so
She,
I
yeah,
don't think she
no
wanted to hear
changing.
it.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes. So, yes, but I appreciated the parchment paper. It was easier cleanup even than the silicone mat. So, do you ever take part in cookie exchanges? Are you allowed to participate?
You know, that's so funny. I very recently last year was told by a group of friends that I go to every year for a cookie party that I'm no longer allowed to participate and I have to be the judge. So I now this year am judging two of my friends' cookie parties, which is really fun, you know, and I don't do it alone. I have a couple other friends that will come and help me judge the competition. But yeah, I'm no longer allowed to participate in a lot of them. And especially if it's a competition. If it's just an exchange, absolutely. I
Well, they
would
want you to
love.
participate in an exchange. They want to eat your
Yeah,
cookies. Yeah, they just don't want to
yes, but they
compete against
don't.
you. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So what, if you're going to a cookie exchange to participate, just to give people cookies, basically, what's your favorite way of storing cookies and delivering them to people? What kind of containers do you use?
Oh yeah, you know, I repurpose a lot of takeout containers. I think those black containers with the clear plastic lids, I are wonderful ways of transporting cookies too because they keep them pretty protected, especially if your cookies are a little bit more fragile. I like to layer them with parchment paper as well because I think that kind of like adds a little bit of a buffer from the cookies hitting the sides or hitting each other. So that is usually what I'm transporting cookies in to take if I'm, you know, hosting a cookie exchange of sorts or going to one. I'll always say like, hey, there are cute tins on Amazon. I love like a cookie tin. I just think that they're also very nostalgic looking and like they are made for that. They're very durable and I always recommend layering the parchment paper in there though because that kind of creates it's almost like the tissue paper effect. Like it creates a little bit of like insulation and protection for your cookies so that they don't arrive to your destination all crumbly.
How long, I know it's probably different for every cookie, but for a majority of cookies in your cookbook, how long are they good for if you store them well?
Yeah, you know, I think most, thinking about the book, most of the recipes probably would be countertop storage. I think anywhere from 3 to 5 days. And sometimes the cookies, you know, I have a couple recipes in there, eggnog snickerdoodles being one of them, where I think they actually do taste better the next day. Don't know what it is. And they don't get, if you store them properly, they do not get dried out. And yeah, there's just something about how that flavor develops and they become like a, even a little softer sometimes. I think it's the cream of tartar that helps it in that particular recipe. But yeah, just anywhere from about 3 to 5 days. And anytime we're testing a recipe, we always include storage instructions. So, you know, usually one of our early tests we'll leave out on the counter or store it in the refrigerator to see how long the cookie actually stays good for.
Now, we talked about chocolate chip cookies a couple of different times. The chocolate chip cookie you have in this book, you have different varieties, but the one that I love the title of, is you call it maybe the best chocolate chip cookies. So where did that recipe come from? I mean, the picture looks amazing. I can't wait to try them. But is it, why maybe the best chocolate chip cookie?
Well, you know, I think tempering the expectations of folks is a big part of our job.
Okay.
But also everybody has their own types of chocolate chip cookies that they love. You know, I think I, for this chapter specifically, I crowdsourced a lot of opinions, and everybody's got a lot of opinions about chocolate chip cookies specifically. Some people love thin and crispy. Some people love really soft and chewy. Some people like cakey chocolate chip cookies. I don't agree with them, but they do. And so this, that particular recipe, I think, does kind of almost like it like amalgamates all of the like wonderful flavors and textures that would please the widest swath of chocolate chip cookie lovers possible. And I think that's why we call them maybe the best chocolate chip cookies ever. But they are, I mean, in my opinion, that is like a perfect recipe. It is no notes. Like I think that it is kind of like the gold standard chocolate chip cookie.
You made a video recently where you were making chocolate chip cookies, and then you did like a survey of your team who was all in the room with you, and everyone seemed to agree that chocolate chip cookies need to be eaten warm. But that's really hard. That's really hard unless you're in the room when they're being baked. So does this cookie taste better warm, or is it okay the next day?
You know, Amy, I'm actually team room temperature. I don't know. I think there's a time and a place for a warm cookie. I love a skillet cookie, but for some reason, I feel like you just get so many more of the flavor, the notes in the actual cookie. Like the vanilla comes through a lot more. The kind of molassesy notes of the brown sugar comes through a lot more when they're room temperature. So I do think that there is a time and a place for a warm cookie. I think you could always zap it in the microwave or like put it back in a low oven for like 5 minutes, but you know, then you run the risk of drying out. Yeah, I'm kind of team room temperature cookie. I don't know, what about you?
I am more team room temperature just because I don't often have an instance where I'm making cookies and immediately eating them all right away.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm normally making them for something, some sort of like I'm taking them to an event or they're for my kids for later. And so I don't have a lot of opportunity to eat warm cookies, I feel, is the problem.
You know what you could do if you do want to eat more warm cookies is I will make that recipe or the salted butterscotch chocolate chunk cookies, and I will freeze the dough. So I call it like my kind of cookies on demand, emotional support cookies, as they were. And I will just, you know, anytime I need a cookie or I've got people coming over, it's a great way of just like, you know, popping that cookie dough ball onto a sheet tray and baking it for maybe 1 to 2 minutes longer than the recipe indicates, because it's frozen. But that is an instance where you could have warm cookies whenever you want.
That sounds perfect. That for a cookie emergency, just have it ready.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right. Our guest is Vaughn Vreeland, author of the book Cookies, The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat. And listeners, we'd love for you to join us. Do you have a favorite cookie that you want to share, or do you have a question? We have the Cookie Man with us today. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. We are running out of time, so make sure you give us a call, 614-292-8513. And All Sides continues in just a moment. We'll take your calls, and we'll also address a little more baking tips. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Cookies take on a special significance at this time of year, whether you're baking for your family or taking part in a cookie exchange. From traditional sugar cookies to gingerbread men, there's a wide variety of treats everyone can look forward to at the holidays or year-round. And just in time for this season, the talent behind the cooking section of the New York Times has a new book devoted to cookies. Still with us is Vaughn Vreeland, author of the book Cookies, The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat. He's also the supervising video producer for the New York Times cooking section. Thanks again for being here, Vaughn.
Thank you, Amy.
And listeners, you can join us now. Tell us your favorite holiday cookie, 614-292-8513, or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Now, I don't have every cookie in your whole book memorized, but I'm not sure that I noticed. How do you feel about the special fancy cookies at this time of year? Because my great grandma was really amazing at making pizzelles, but I don't own a pizzelle iron, so I don't make them. Right? Are they not in here because you need special equipment?
Yeah, a lot of those that require special equipment were something that I kind of labored over a little bit when creating the table of contents, but ultimately, again, we just wanted people, the widest amount of people possible, to be able to make these cookies. And a lot of those recipes that do require special equipment, if you have them, you probably already have your own recipe that mm-hmm. you like to make. So,
that's true.
That was one of those things that we kind of thought about when we were creating the overall table of contents.
And then you also have the best sugar cookie in here. But you have it just decorated for the sake of this book. You have it just decorated with one color. Are you not a fancy cookie decorator? Do you not or do you do that?
I do. I love it. Okay. I love it, Amy. If I've got time, mm-hmm. The last few years, unfortunately, the holidays have been a little jam packed with all the cookie madness.
One solid color instead of any fanciness.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, totally. Like I'm like, give me the most mod design possible, and I will run with it. But no, I do. I love decorating cookies. I love gingerbread houses. I love fancy cookie decorations, but oftentimes I'm racing from cookie event to cookie event during the season.
I have to mention, our listeners can't see it, but your table of contents is actually a table of cookies, and you put a circle picture of every cookie in this table of cookies, table of contents. I love it. Was that your idea? It's so cute.
our designer Deb is amazing. She is the one who came up with that idea. We kind of were riffing off of a periodic table of the elements that, the table of cookies was going to be that thing that when you first open the book, you see and you're just like, really intrigued, right? Like you get to see a visual representation of every single cookie in the book, which for a table of contents is like really kind of novel. You don't usually get to see a photo in your table of contents of every recipe. So when she kind of gave us the mock-ups of that and we tinkered around with it a little bit, we were like, this is the thing that like people are going to be talking about in this book.
There's a section called Wow, I Made This. Or I guess it has a question mark. Wow, I made this? and I have to say, the cookies in it are a little intimidating. I am intrigued by, tell me about the Italian rainbow cookies. Can I make them if I'm mid-level beginner / medium baker?
Yes, I think that one is, Wow, I Made This is like, I made this, but it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
That one just requires a lot of sheet trays because you're baking three different colors of, that one's, it's almost like a mixture between a cake and a cookie. Mm. So you bake like flat sheets of your almond flavored cookie, and then you're stacking them to kind of create that Italian flag. And then you're like covering it in the chocolate. So that one is definitely more it's very visually stunning, but it's also like requires a little bit more space and time to make that one, and I think that's kind of the purpose of the Wow, I Made This.
And then you have another section called Techniques to Brag About. So that one I feel like, do I need to stay away from? Is that for advanced level people?
No, I think one of the great things about a lot of these recipes, especially if they're part of our cookie week is that they also come with videos. So a
Mm.
lot of the videos will teach you, kind of like hold your hand through the techniques, right? I think especially with baking recipes, it is so nice that we do have a pretty storied video team to be able to help us like convey that message, because there are a lot of techniques that people are, a bit intimidated by, like browning butter, for example. It's a wonderful thing to bring out a lot of great flavor in your cookies, but people get scared. Butter is an expensive thing, and if you burn it, it kind of ruins your day. And so that is one of those techniques to brag about. Also, I think the way the recipes are written will also help like instill that confidence in you as somebody who might not be as experienced as a home baker.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about cookies with Vaughn Vreeland, author of the book Cookies: The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat. Listeners, there's still time for you to join us, 614-292-8513, or email allsides@wosu.org. We got an email from Connie, and she wants to know what you recommend instead of Crisco. She says that butter doesn't create the consistency she's looking for in every case. So what about those Crisco lovers out there?
Oh, I'm not. I am in no way, shape, or form yucking the yum of our Crisco lovers. I still think that Crisco has a time and a place as well. Like, I think that that's one of the things about, especially those family recipes, right? That call for some of those ingredients. It's just not going to taste the same if you don't use it. I think that that is, I something that would be maybe similar if you're looking for like a more quote unquote like naturally derived thing would be coconut oil. But a lot of that time, a lot of the time, that's going to even create a different texture. Sometimes it has flavor in it if it's unrefined, So I'd say stick with the Crisco. Stick to your Crisco guns if you aren't afraid of it. If you're asking for something different, there are, maybe more organic versions of vegetable shortening out there. But I'm not here to, I say use the Crisco.
All right. And what about people who grew up in a certain decade and use margarine instead of butter? Thoughts on that?
Oh, see, I think that
I know, right?
if you're for that, I think if you're gonna do it, just use the butter, because that's kind of trying to be butter, right? It's, it's kind of faking it a little bit. I say just go ahead and use the butter. My mom still buys margarine, and I'm like, Mom, what's going on here?
Imperial brand margarine was a staple for a long time around my house, so
Oh yeah, I think we have some country crock downstairs.
yes, until my sister's more of a baker than me, and she moved out and was on her own, and one day she texts me and she's like, "Did you know real butter's better?" So in addition to your work at the Times, you also were a judge on a Hallmark Channel holiday baking competition called Baked with Love. Can you tell me about that? How did that come about?
Yes. So earlier this year, I got contacted by the people at the Hallmark Network, and I at first was, I at first I didn't know if it was real or not. But then once I did actually vet them, I was really excited. They were fans of my work, and had decided that they wanted to start getting more into competition programming. I think that this year is the first year where they have more than one competition program on the Hallmark Network as part of their countdown to Christmas. And they asked me if I wanted to be a judge on it. And as a lover of baking competitions, somebody who grew up watching the Food Network competitions and still watches Great British Bake Off, I thought, man, that would be really fun to be a part of. So I said yes, and thankfully I was allowed to do it. And I was I we filmed it in England over the summertime, and made it look snowy and festive outside, and wore winter coats in 85-degree weather. But it was really wonderful to be a part of, and I think I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, and I didn't know that I was going to love it as much as I did. And all of the contestants on that show are just absolutely incredible.
Now, I've always wondered, for someone who's a judge of those, do you eat like a lot or the whole cookie, or do you just taste everything? I can imagine you would get cookied out.
Yeah, you know, Amy, this was my first time doing it, and I learned very quickly that my eyes were a lot bigger than my stomach a lot of the time. I learned how to take smaller bites, but yeah, for a lot of things, you know, I definitely wanted to actually taste it. And many, many days of filming, I would consider the festive bakes my lunch because I did not have any room for anything else after that. So we do actually eat a lot. And then the rest of the food, you know, the contestants try each other's food at the end, which is really sweet. And then also the crew. So nothing really goes to waste, which is awesome.
So in the show each week, there's a different holiday theme, and contestants had to incorporate that theme into their baking. Did you get any ideas for future cookie recipes for yourself from being on the show?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There was one episode that was specifically, there was a cookie challenge and someone made an old-fashioned cookie and it was delicious. And so I was like, oh man, that's such a great idea. There was also some like chocolate involved in it too. And I was like, oh, chocolate bourbon, cherry, delicious, delicious flavor profile, flavor combinations. So I was very inspired by a lot of the bakes that I saw on that. And I actually was like, man, maybe I should try and like make some of my own. Like this is what I would have made if I were competing, but I haven't been able to do that just quite yet. I haven't had the time, but that would be fun.
I was also wondering, as someone who loves baking, were you tempted to try to help the contestants? Well, or just, I mean, I know you were supposed to judge, but were you like, oh no?
There were a couple moments where we were like, I can't watch this. It's like watching a train wreck in slow motion. But yeah, we couldn't hop in. That's like, you know, that's part of being part of what we signed up for. We would be able to, you know, I think they, because of editing and time, obviously, you don't get to see a lot of it, but we're offering a lot of suggestions, a lot of pointers to them. Like, you know, I saw that you were maybe working your pie dough a little bit more than you should have. So next time try doing this, like next time try doing that. And really, I mean, even though it's filmed over a short period of time, the amount of growth that a lot of these teams had was incredible.
So it wasn't just cookies. You were judging cakes and pies and other things like that
Yeah.
too. Yeah.
Yep. Every episode, there were different challenges. They made trifles, they made macarons, they made cookie structures, they made pies. It was everything.
All right. Well, back to your book for the last few minutes that we have. There is one chapter, and the title is Honestly, Just Go Make This Right Now. And it only has one cookie in the chapter, and it's the double chocolate chip cookie. So, what makes the double chocolate chip cookie better than the maybe the best chocolate chip cookie?
Well, you know, that one is a little bit more involved. So that's why I don't know if I could say like maybe this is the best chocolate chip cookie. It's also a new cookie for the book, so it wasn't as tried and true of a recipe. I think the maybe the best chocolate chip cookie, quote unquote, is a recipe that we are very known for at the New York Times. And so this one though was kind of my magnum opus cookie for the entire book. So I definitely wanted to point people in that direction when they were flipping through. It is a brown butter chocolate chunk cookie made with salted toffee, and it is like the best grown-up version of that maybe the best chocolate chip cookie ever cookie. It's got homemade toffee in it. It's really nuanced. It's got brown butter. The two kinds of chocolate really balance everything out. And to me, that is my ultimate cookie.
And we talked earlier about parchment paper. We talked about different things. You have, a how to use this book section, and you have like just a few like tips on, succeeding. And one of the tips is read the whole recipe before you bake. Is that important? Make sure you have everything you need or you
Thousand
understand it.
percent. Yes, you would be so shocked at how many people do not read a recipe before they start baking. And you know, I think if you read a recipe and you realize that, hey, those 4 cups of flour that you measured out, two of them get incorporated in step two, and two of them get incorporated in step four. But I incorporated all four cups in step two. And I'm like, oh, wait, I wasn't supposed to do that. So just kind of making sure that you set yourself up for success. I think that's always something that I really encourage. And even just things that you can do to have fun. Like, I love having little tchotchkes around me in my kitchen so that they remind me of fun trips that I've been on and like are there to kind of cheer me on as I'm baking. I love a good playlist, making sure that you just have like really sound baking tools and ingredients, making sure that you actually bring your ingredients up to temperature. If it calls for room temperature, do not use cold butter,
Yeah.
things like that. Just like really making sure that you are set up to not only succeed, but have the best time possible, because it is stressful when things don't go your way.
Yeah. Well, and the first tip is repeat after me, baking is fun. So,
Yes.
we'll leave it there. Our guest has been Vaughn Breland, author of the book Cookies: The Best Recipes for the Perfect Anytime Treat. Vaughn, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Amy. I had a great time chatting cookies and happy cookie week.
And you're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amy Jurevich.